broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. You know, in this beautiful summertime, you've got to find some refreshment. You've just got to find it. And who'd have thought you'd go to a podcast to get refreshed in the summer?
That's quite the leap, Mr. Sorensen, that your summertime fun is now a podcast. You probably just threw someone into depression. They're like, really? This is the best my summer's going to get? Hopefully not. But this could be the podcast that changes your life. That's all I'm saying.
I think we got a really important topic today. We're going to be talking about Social Security. This is something, you know, you've been paying into your whole dang life and you want to reap the rewards of it and you want to get as much out of it as you can. Right.
And for you youngsters out there, you're like, Matt and Mark are covering Social Security. I'm going to skip this one. No. Don't go anywhere yet. I know you're here for the regular tax and legal tip, which are going to be good. But, hey, you're going to be paying into this system, you know, and how much should you pay in? And payroll planning and your overall retirement planning. And if you're young, you've been hearing us preach, you know, from the pulpit for years now. We need you saving. We want you thinking long term. So, you young people, you know, this show's for you too. This is all good. This is multi-generational.
Well, I think a lot of the questions I get about Social Security is from, you know, people in their 40s talking about their parents, you know, should my parents take Social Security? A lot of kids are kind of the financial, you know, mind, so to speak, or their financial advisor for their parents. And their parents really rely on them to be a little more savvy on that in a lot of instances. And so, but also these are, you know, a lot of those kids are now taking care of their parents in an older age. And when do we start getting them on Social Security? When do we not? So we're going to go over that. We'll have Randy Lubke on. He's a expert in this field. We've had him on a few years ago on this topic and really opened my mind on a lot of things I didn't even think about and a couple of strategies you can do to maximize how much you're going to get paid out. So we'll be bringing him on. In fact, I just even had a consult yesterday in office with a client asking me Social Security questions. And I said, listen to the podcast tomorrow. I'm going to ask those questions to Randy. So I already got a couple questions from an actual client yesterday. Pretty common questions, but I didn't have the exact answer to give. So I'm looking forward to
Randy's great. I guess I'll get the honor of introducing him later. He's been on the show before. He's the co-author of my new book and I'll mention that later, but stay tuned for that second half of the show. People, it might take you a couple commutes to get through this podcast, but it'll be worth it. For those of you that have a long commute, you know, this podcast might be just that perfect timing. Others might have to break it up, but stick with it.
It'll take Mark a week, you know, from his Idaho commute, his 4.5 minute commute to work.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. That's why I moved to small town America. I'm getting my life back. I'm getting fresh air and a little bit of relaxation on the weekends and trying, but my stress level is just off the chart. I mean, it's been crazy. It was funny. I was joking with a client today on a call out of Florida, and she might appreciate this. I think she's a regular listener. And I was just joking. We're talking estate plan. You know, how are your kids doing? What do we need to put in your estate plan? Are they on drugs or rehab? And she was laughing. I was just joking, you know. And then I said, well, one of my daughters, she's getting married. I wish she was in rehab instead. I know for some of you that have kids with substance abuse problems or addictions, you know, you don't joke about rehab. It's hard, but I was joking. I'm like, yeah, man, I'd rather pay for rehab than a wedding. I mean, man, think about it. I mean, I'm going to give you three arguments here. All right. Why rehab
have to is better sell than me. Wedding.
Okay. All right. Number one, rehab is a fixed cost right there. Any dad out there, any woman that's been married, you know, it is a bottomless, it could hit you for weeks or months after a wedding, the costs that just come out of the woodwork. I mean, you know, the calls, you know, are still, okay, here's my wedding dress. What's this? What are we, what's our budget? I mean, everything. You can't put a budget on this because it's your little daughter's wedding.
Oh, yeah.
It's unlimited. It could be, it's crazy. Yeah. So you're constantly fighting that ceiling of the cost of the wedding. With the rehab, you write one check, done. Okay, number two. I'm just flying off the paper. Number two, why this is good. They're on lockdown. There's no phone calls. There's no drama. No one's calling me up saying, oh, I want this flower. Is it going to be in bloom this time of season? Or is, you know, what color, you know, what's the frosting on the cake? And, and then all the fights, you know, everybody's got an opinion in the family and there's this battle and my stress level goes off the chart. I'm like, let me just set up a company in the Caribbean and a reverse merger with an international stock deal. It's easier. Please. Yeah. Don't make me decide what hors d'oeuvre we're going to have when the dance starts. I can't deal with this. It's just.
Well, yeah. Well, you realize that the expectation of a wedding is, you know, the most memorable days of your life. Whereas the expectation of rehab is we just need to, I mean, it's like a blanket and a cot and maybe some sandwiches for lunch. I mean, what, you know, it's pretty, you know, I get
it's bare bones. It's bare bones. It's bare done. Bones. Yeah. You just get it done. Yeah. Okay. So that's number two, why rehab's better. No one's calling me and there's no drama. There's no fight
here.
Yeah. No one's fighting over the color of the tablecloths at the rehab dining room. You know, it's just like, just get lunch, you know, just feed them. It's over with. They're just going to eat. Right.
Okay. They're clean. Okay. You know, there's no white substance, you know, powder floating around. We're good. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now, number three, why rehab is better than a wedding. And many of you will go, of course, Mark went here. Because I can write off up to 10 grand of rehab as a tax deductible expense. And in health insurance might even cover it, right? So no health insurance is going to be paying for my daughter's wedding. And I get no write-off whatsoever. I'm thinking of trying to put some business cards on the plates or something. But my wife's like, oh, you're not even going there, Mark. So I can't even write off so I get a write off for rehab. I mean, that's it. Boom. See, three reasons. Yeah. I thought that was compelling, Matt. I don't know. What's your ruling on the bench?
Well, I'm gonna overrule your objection to the wedding here. And
I just pray that my wife and daughter do not listen to this podcast. Is that what you're
saying? That is true. That is true.
Because I'm toast if they do.
Yeah, you're done for. Well, I think, I mean, you made some valid points, some valid points, but in the grand scheme of things, man, your daughter's getting married. It's going to be a great day.
Yeah.
No one wants to see a kid going through rehab.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, I like the twist you put on it. I got to say, I didn't think you were going to make it through that tip, but.
Yeah. And regrettably, this is not my official tax tip for the day. Do you know how many times my wife and daughter have quoted, Dad, you just want the chipper chicken. You just want the chipper chicken.
I don't even know what that is.
From Father of the Bride, Steve Martin. Oh,
yeah. I do remember that movie, but I don't remember that term.
Frank, the wedding planner. Oh, you just want the chipper chicken. That's what I wanted was the cheaper chicken. I'm not getting chicken either. I'm going steak and seafood or something. I'm screwed. I can't even. Steve Martin's got it better than me and Father of the Bride. I don't know. It's just. Yeah.
Well, make sure you got some gluten-free options, some vegan options, some vegetarian options. So.
Yeah. I know. Final point. I will say this. I got some pictures yesterday from my daughter trying on wedding dresses. And, it just melts your heart. You know, I'm done. I'm just I just hand over the credit card right there. I just did checkbook. Here's
it's over, man.
It's over. Yep. You see that picture of your daughter in her wedding dress and you're just like, all right, where's my home equity line? How do I open that? Of course not. It's over. Okay. All right. Well, I've been talking way too much. Matt, give us a legal tip. You got a legal tip for us? I think this is from your.
All right.
I'm stoked to hear.
Yeah, it. I got a legal tip here. I think, and I like this legal tip. It's one that's I think really important to know. It's good for lawyers to know, and for those of you who ever talk to a lawyer to know. So let's go ahead with the legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Now, this legal tip comes compliments of Donald Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen.
Bless his heart.
Thank you. All the lessons we get to learn from Donald Trump and his legal troubles and tax structures, you know, there's a lot to learn. Yeah. So if you were following the news, Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's private lawyer, personal lawyer, had his home and office raided. That's right. A lawyer had his home and office raided by the FBI.
Oh my God.
Now, I think a lot of people are like, wait a second. I thought lawyers' records are attorney-client privileged. I didn't think the government could go seize records of a lawyer.
Yeah.
And clearly, a lot of the motivation revolves around Donald Trump and, you know, one of his number one clients. And some of the investigations that the FBI has had ongoing, you know, you can't watch the news, any news channel, without hearing it, you know, at least once every hour of something going on with Donald Trump's investigations. So it raises a good question about when is your information attorney-client privilege if you're talking to your lawyer? And there's really three scenarios when the information you give to your lawyer is not attorney-client privilege.
Really? So, I'm kind of anxious here. My clients are probably shaking in their boots here.
That's right. That's okay. Right, my friends.
Three.
Okay. Here's number one.
Okay.
Number one, and I'm going to give a couple examples here. You know, let's bring this to life. If a third party non-lawyer is present when you're communicating information. Let's go to Breaking Bad here, okay?
Okay.
We got Heisenberg, you know, the criminal mastermind, if you will, in Breaking Bad. That's the, you know, has the meth lab.
Is this a scene out in the desert when they put the dollar in?
No, we're in Saul Goodman's office.
Okay, we're in Saul Goodman's office. Okay, this is
we're
good.
We're in Saul Goodman's office, okay?
All right.
And let's say that the bodyguard, I forget that his name, is present.
Ooh, yeah, okay.
Okay. Forget him, the big bodyguard, you know.
You had me at Breaking Bad. Keep going.
Okay. Now, if Heisenberg is communicating information about the crimes he's committed to Saul Goodman, his lawyer, and there's a third party, non-lawyer present in the room, that information is not attorney-client privileged.
Wow.
So now in the business world of things, let me go over why this is a little more applicable. Let's say you have a tax issue with the IRS and maybe the IRS is chasing you down for tax fraud or for even just an audit. Maybe it could just be, you know, was this, you know, these expenses deductible or not? And you have your accountant present who's not a lawyer, or you have your financial advisor present on the call. Now all that information you're communicating to your lawyer is no longer attorney-client privileged.
Wow. Wow. Now leave it to me because I'm being a cheese ball, but this is good. This is really good. But Matthew McConaughey had it down. Of course I have a man crush on Matthew, but and Lincoln Lawyer. Remember when he's in the back of his car driving? And
that's
he's
right.
And he tells his driver, put on the headphones, bud.
Headphones, exactly.
Yeah. Because Matthew, that whole time, I didn't know in Lincoln Lawyer. I was like, okay, it was to protect privilege. Gosh, what you don't learn from the silver screen, people. This is why Lincoln Lawyer is on your must-watch list if you're a follower of the show. Okay.
Wow. So,
okay, number two. So one, someone else is present. All right, number two.
Yeah. Now, number two is only legal advice is attorney-client privileged. So a lot of people seek out business advice from their lawyer, okay?
Okay.
So they're going over different business issues and items, and that information about their business, whether it's an org chart or, you know, operations in your business, that is not attorney-client privileged. That could be subject to subpoena. And you know, and requested an investigation or any other matter. So only the actual legal advice given it would be protected by attorney-client privilege.
And that can be quite subjective. So I can imagine business advice regarding human resources, hiring, firing, legal structures. That could be quite subjective. A lot of advice that I give that's business is going to be legally related, obviously. But okay, cool. Yeah. Okay.
So it needs to have some type of legal connection or legal base to it. And if it does, it'll still be attorney-client privilege. You know, it could be a matter of I had to fire an employee and I talked to my lawyer about the reasons we were firing this employee. And that is somewhat of a business decision. Some of those reasons may have been they suck at their job, you know, and that would be attorney-client privileged. So you got to be careful on whether, you know, some of these things have overlapping concerns, but if there is a legal overlap, it's still attorney-client privileged.
Okay.
All right. Now the last item of what is not attorney-client privileged is if the lawyer is in on the crime. Okay. If the lawyer is in on this, in the crime, there's no longer attorney-client privilege. Now, this is the exception that the FBI was using against Michael Cohen, the lawyer for Donald Trump, to be able to get his records and information. It is because they alleged and had information that a judge bought and agreed with that Michael Cohen himself was involved in criminal activity, not just advising a client about it, but himself was in on the crime. And this could be Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad, wow, who was kind of in on it too. Right?
Yeah, he was helping launder money. So there's the deception. You think it's attorney-client privilege, but...
Exactly. Or this could be, you know, let's say you're a, maybe you're not a Breaking Bad fan, maybe you're a Godfather fan, okay? This could be the conciliori. Yeah. Tom Hanks, the Godfather.
Yeah.
This could be him. He was also in on the crime.
Yeah.
So in there we go. We've got three situations where attorney-client privilege is not protected. Again, lawyers in on the crime. Now that one's just kind of more fun and more kind of a movie situation. I, you know, that likely doesn't come up. It won't come up in our office. Number two is, remember, only the legal advice is attorney-client privilege. And third, which is probably the most important one, is be careful of who else is there in the call or in the room when you're communicating attorney-client, really confidential information to your lawyer. Make sure it's only lawyers involved in that situation.
Wow. Wow. Excellent legal tip, Matt. And you pulled in, look, you pulled in Breaking Bad, The Godfather.
The Godfather.
We talked Lincoln Lawyer.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. You got it all. I mean, you should be on triple MSNBC. Play, yeah, that's a triple play. Some would argue it could be a home run. Could be.
That's true. Maybe in the park home run. Maybe.
Yeah, could be. okay, well, I've got to throw down a tax tip here, even though we've been chatting for a little bit here. Hopefully many of you are finding this, entertaining and educational. So a little tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. So for the tax tip, big deal. And many of you have maybe seen this in the news. And if you've been reading our blog articles each week in the newsletter, you know where I'm going. We are going to the internet sales tax issue. If you have already read my article, please allow me to give just a quick moment here to introduce the issue for those that don't know what's going on here. Many of you don't follow Supreme Court decisions, but this was a biggie. So it just happened last week.
It was on the front page news, man.
Oh, front page. Here's the deal. Some of you know that if you go online and buy a product, you get out of paying sales tax. Now, the biggies like Amazon, eBay, others have just voluntarily collected sales tax because they don't want to deal with it. But they've got the infrastructure and the teams and the billions of dollars of profit. They can handle it. But if you go on Amazon, you're going to pay sales tax. But there's other little sites where you don't. And so a lot of times people have been playing the game of shopping for something online and maybe saving a few bucks by skipping out on sales tax. The Supreme Court has said no more. I was about ready to give my opinion, but I'll hold off for a moment. But the Supreme Court has said no more. There was a case in South Dakota where they went after Overstock, essentially, and a couple other related parties that even bragged about, come on our website and you don't even pay sales tax. And they kind of taunted, I think, the federal government to intervene, but that's their problem now because South Dakota sued them and said, no. If you sell to citizens of our state, we're collecting sales tax and you have to pay it. And they're like, well, we don't even have a warehouse in South Dakota. We don't even have an office there. We don't have employees there. We do not have nexus. We do not have contact. We do not have a physical presence in your state. And you, the Supreme Court in Quill versus whoever, I forgot the name of it, but it's the Quill case, said that you have to have a physical presence, South Dakota, before you can tax us. It's not going to happen. And so they went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, well, in today's new environment, you have economic presence because you are on the web selling to people in South Dakota. So South Dakota can now charge sales tax to all those transactions. Now, Overstock doesn't pay sales tax. They're just required to go collect it. So it really, what I like about this law is that it levels the playing field. And in my article, I give some of those political arguments that some people in the news said, well, this is going to hurt small business. Bull crap. This helps small business. Small business has been competing against Walmart down the street for years, getting, you know, business sucked out of the small business owner's pocket and going to these big box stores. And then we had the internet to contend with. Small business owners had to charge sales tax at their brick and mortar location, and other people could go online and save a few bucks and even avoid sales tax. So I think this really is a good thing, and it levels the playing field. The problem is the chaos. Matt, you were coming in on this before the show even. Tell me your chaos theory.
Well, let's say I have my little shop. I sell stuff online. I mean, just even thinking of myself selling my books online, okay, or some of my product that I should charge sales tax for now. Well, if I sell a book into, I don't know, Columbia, South Carolina, do I got to fill out a sales tax form there now? And then the next book I sell is in Florida. The next book I sell is in some little town in Washington State, or, you know what I mean? Now I've got not just 50 different states, but I got different cities and jurisdiction that collect the sales tax I got to comply with. And so it could be a significant
burden
on business owners. Now, one thing, and you point this out in your article, Mark, is hopefully the way it's going to go is as South Dakota had in their law. And I think this is one thing the Supreme Court liked, is they basically, South Dakota's law, they said, until you have like 100,000 of sales here, or I think there's a certain number of transactions, 200 transactions, you don't have to worry about this. But if you're doing enough, a couple hundred transactions or 100 grand or more of sales, then you got to start complying with this. And I think there's some good rational, you know, reasons of how states should do it in that way, or cities. So, and hopefully that's what we see moving forward, but who knows? It's going to be chaos, because now some of these cities are going to feel empowered to just start, you know, hammering away at all these internet transactions going, and small business owners going to be like, what is there, over 1,000 cities in the United States I got to now comply with their sales tax rules? You know, and if I sell a couple hundred thousand in product a year, that's going to be a lot of compliance.
Yeah. And it really gets tricky, because you look at different states. Some may say, well, my product's not subject to sales tax. I do. See, there's a lot of tricks in this. When you provide service, that's typically not subject to sales tax, but certain educational materials can be. One of the states that's very aggressive with sales tax, and Matt used it in his example, was Washington State. See, Washington State does not have an income tax, so they got to make up for it somewhere. So they have a very aggressive sales tax regime. And so a product that you sell to someone in Arizona or South Carolina, you may not have to collect sales tax, even if it was on the internet, because your product doesn't comply to that sales tax regime in the South Carolina, Arizona. But then in Washington, it does, even if you sell it on the web. So you're like, what? So now I've got states, cities, counties wanting to tax my internet transaction, and they've got different rules on what applies to internet tax, sales tax. So, oh, this is going to be a mess in some ways. And so this is why you want to stay tuned here, people.
That's right.
We've got a lot of internet sales. We're on the case. We've got e-commerce clients are a huge part of our client database, and we help them with their S corporations and tax planning, and they're trying to get out of all sorts of issues. And internet sales tax was one of them. Also, I'm going to say this is a topic coming up in future articles and tips, is can the person that lives in California say, oh, I sell on the internet, but my server's in Nevada, so I don't have to pay California tax. Okay. We're going to talk about that one too, people. So e-commerce is the wild, wild west, and they're reining it in. You know, Doc Holliday showed up. They're going to clean the town up, you know?
Yeah. So drunk and sick, but he's there.
He's there. He and Wyatt Earp and his buds. They're going to clean up I thought it was ironic. South Dakota, you know, wild, wild west. Get it? They're cleaning it up the west.
I got that one. That was pretty clear. Okay. All right.
Sometimes I have to explain my jokes. They don't go over.
The chipper chicken, I was like, what the heck is a chipper chicken?
Oh, my gosh. Today's show's going well. I'm happy. Okay, we got to introduce our guest. Are we ready? Should we go to our special guest? All right. So we're going to talk about Social Security. Boom.
Buckle up. It's time to refresh you, listeners. Mark and Matt have hand-selected professionals from around the world. From successful businesses, personal stories, or hard-hitting tips and tricks, please welcome today's Refresh Your Wealth guest.
Okay, well, folks, we've mentioned his name earlier. This is a treat. This is really important, and I'm glad that many of you, young or old, have stayed on the podcast for this portion of the show to talk about Social Security. Many of you think it's irrelevant or there's nothing you can do about it. It's not even going to be here or whatever. All these different thoughts and feelings. We're going to address them today. Randy Lupke is a licensed financial advisor, a registered investment advisor, an RIA, which means he has a fiduciary duty to do what's best for you in your financial planning, which I love. 95% of advisors around the country are captive, meaning they sell products for who their employer is. I love that Randy's independent. He's the co-author of our newest book, The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom, What Wall Street Isn't Telling You. And so believe it or not, he's an insider telling you what Wall Street doesn't want you to know. He's been doing advising on mortgage lending for years and financial planning, insurance planning. He just knows numbers, knows finance. He's like my Dave Ramsey on steroids. So I just love Randy. Hence, we have him as a sponsor of many of our workshops too, because he just is no nonsense. So we're grateful to have him here with us today. And Social Security is one of his expertises. He actually teaches classes on designing a Social Security plan. Can you believe that, people? There's some strategy involved here. So this is really, really good. So Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mr. Kohler. And Matt, glad to be here again. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you bet. Yeah, well, thanks so much, Randy. Well, I want to just open this up. I mean, Social Security is a big topic and, you know, we can get in the politics of it and all that nonsense, but I think so many people are dying to know, how do I get the most out of Social Security? And I think to start this off, this might be helpful. I had a client in my office just yesterday who's asking me Social Security questions. And I said, wait, we're doing a podcast tomorrow. I'm going to ask Randy these questions. Listen to the podcast. Okay. Yeah. He actually does listen to the podcast already. So, so they appreciate this, but he has a basic question. I think this is a good intro to the topic. People have paid into it for years, right? Now this client working and spouse is working about approaching 60 right now, looking at Social Security. What should he be thinking about right now? He's like, I don't need the money. I'm planning to work or I'll have enough investment income even when I hit 65. But what should I be thinking about this? Do I go get the benefit? Do I wait? Where do people start in analyzing this once they're starting to get close enough where they can start pulling it out? What should people be thinking about?
Okay, that's a great question, a good place to start this out. So the first thing they should do is go to the socialsecurity.gov website and pull down a copy of their benefit statement, which is always available. The website can be a little tricky to navigate, but because you have to answer personal questions to protect your privacy. But the reason you want to get that statement is it shows your contribution history going back to the beginning of time.
Now, Can anybody do that at any age? Or do I have to wait till I'm close to, like I thought, can someone in their 20s even do that?
How old Absolutely. As long as you've been reporting earnings to Social Security, there's a record for you. And in fact, you should be pulling it at least once a year to make sure that the earnings you said you paid into Social Security the previous years is being recorded. Because, not to believe the government could actually make a mistake recording numbers improperly. That would never happen. But just to make sure they did it right, you could look at the record. So yeah, look at it every year. But that's where you start out. So what did you pay in? And then on that statement, you're also going to see three key numbers. First one you're going to see is if you started collecting your benefits at your earliest age, which would be 62 currently, okay. Then it would be what that benefit would be at your full retirement age. And that full retirement age is based on when you're born, right? So I was born in 1953. My full retirement age is 66. Somebody born after 1953 would have maybe 66 and 2 months, and somebody born before then would maybe have 65. And then the third number they're going to see is what their benefit would be at age 70. So they can see what the benefits are going to be at those three main points, and they can see how much money they've been putting in and make sure that they're not missing any years of contribution. That's where I'd start.
Let me just, so people can understand. Those numbers from 62 to, let's say, 66 to 70, those three different intervals there, I presume I can see the exact dollar amount as I'm sitting right now, that if I wait, I get more, right? So the 70 number is going to be more than the 62.
The 70 number will be more than the 62 because at, let's just use 66 as our full retirement age. Full retirement age is a key term, FRA, right? Uh-huh. And that full retirement age again varies on the year you were born. So at 62, typically, you're going to receive 75% of the benefit that you'd receive if you waited till full retirement age.
So just right? 4 years. Yeah. I get more just waiting 4 years.
Yeah, you get 100% of your benefit you're entitled to if you wait until your full retirement age. Now, along with that, if you pull your benefits before full retirement age and you're working, you're earning income, the Social Security Administration could actually claw back some of the benefits they paid you if you earn too much money. So as in other words, sometimes people go, well, I'm going to get my money at 62 because I'm afraid the government's going to go out of business and I won't get my Social Security checks, only to find out a year later that all the earnings they had ended up reducing their benefit and they take it all away again, right? Mm-hmm. So there's two reasons to wait. One is you're going to get more at age 66, and two is if you're earning income, if you're still working, they're going to take most or all, potentially all that benefit away that they give you anyway.
Oh man, I got to just say this right now. And every time I know, Randy, because you talk about this in our book too, which I love. Sorry, self-promotion there. But every time you start this, it just reminds me that when I have a client say, just those two words, Social Security, I say, get a consult. Just talk to Randy.
Right.
Within a half hour to an hour, Randy can guide you through the strategy. People, their strategy here on claiming it. And by the way, if you're younger, we're going to come back to some strategy while you're young into that pay-in process. We're coming to that. But on this, when do you elect it? Every time, I learned something new from you, Randy, where it's like you could save thousands by just choosing it at the right time.
Yeah. If you think about it, Mark, if you could start claiming benefits at 62 and the highest benefit you're going to be paid is age 70, that's 8 years. And 8 years times 12 months is 96. So there's 96 different times you could actually claim benefits over that 8 year time frame. Each one would have a different implication on how much money you'd actually receive. And if you're married, then it gets even more complicated. Because you have two people that potentially contributed to Social Security. So you have to have basically 8 to the 8th power of potential options. And then if one of those people happened to not contribute to Social Security because they worked for like a government agency like the police department or the fire department, they would also be subject to this thing called the government pension offset or the windfall elimination provision. So there's all these different variables that come together, and there's just no way that the common person is going to be able to pick the right strategy without going through the analysis.
Gosh, I love it.
Can we like take some, I know there's, I don't want to get too general and give too many generalities. And I know when people ask me to try and summarize stuff, I'm always like, but I just want to try and digest what a couple things you said.
Sure.
Sounds like if I'm still working and putting into Social Security, it doesn't make much sense to take it out. Because as you said, it seems like there's a penalty. And also I'm better off delaying my benefit and getting a higher payout to later.
Go to FRA. Yeah, full retirement age. Wait till full retirement age, right? If you're working. I like what Matt said.
Yeah, and then we can layer in the nuances. What if you're sick? What if you're terminally ill? So there's another Social Security benefit, which is Social Security disability. And Social Security disability you can claim it at any age, even 20. Let's say you got in a terrible car accident and you were a quadriplegic, so you can't work anymore. will you be entitled to get Social Security disability benefits if you had paid into the system? And the good part about the Social Security disability is, even though you'd be claiming it for, say, 10, 20 years before you reach full retirement age, once you reach full retirement age, there is no penalty, and they'll still give you your full Social Security benefit, even though you were claiming it years early.
I love it. Okay, so what Matt said in summary is that a good general rule to start with is wait to your full retirement age, FRA, if you're still working and don't desperately need the money. You're better
and
off.
You're healthy. And you're healthy.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is another important nuance of Social Security. Now, unlike your 401k, that you put your money into, and if you were to die, at least that money would go to an heir or to a charity. With Social Security, it's insurance. It's pure insurance. And unless you have a spouse or children that would be entitled to the benefits, potentially you could pay into that Social Security insurance fund for years and never collect a penny.
Okay, now let's go there. All right, next topic. Yeah. Matt, okay, if I could, Matt, could I pose a new question?
Yes.
All right.
I will yield to the gentleman from the great state of Idaho.
Every time someone says that, I always feel like I have to explain that. You know, Mark's from Idaho. All right, give me 2 minutes to explain why I live in Idaho. It's kind of like the guy that's, you know, it's like, hey, where are you going to college? Well, I'm going to community college. And then they got to explain why, you know?
It's a good deal.
I'm saving money. I'm not going into debt. I'm going to transfer to the, you know, that whole conversation comes out because, well, I'm going to this school, you know?
Hey, I made that joke when you lived in California. It's all the same. That wasn't an Idaho.
I'm just self-conscious. I'm self-conscious. Yeah. Okay.
I think Idaho is an awesome state. I think the fishing there is great. The hunting's great. The skiing's great. It's an awesome state.
Hiking. Yeah. It is beautiful. And the people are so good. You know, I'm going to share. I just feel prompted to share this. Just one side note, because it keeps me grounded. And it's really, really neat is that I'm mowing my own lawn. I'm washing my own car. And we went to the movies the other night. And It was like Christmas for me. I mean, I'm getting popcorn, I'm getting drinks, I'm buying tickets, and it's like a third of what it was in California. Because I mean, they just kill you at the movie theaters in these big urban areas. And I was in Chicago. And we went out to a movie, and I was like, man, I could have went to a 5-course steak dinner instead of this cost of a movie and popcorn for my kids and family, right? I mean, have you guys noticed that, the cost of just going to a movie, right?
Yeah. But
we're at this little theater in Idaho. We go in to get, and I'm just buying anything. I don't even care. It's like so much cheaper than big city movie theater. And this family that we were right near, they had bought a big popcorn, and they're sharing the popcorn with all the kids in little cups, and they're all drinking ice water. And they just didn't have hardly any money. I mean, it's just totally humble. And I was like, I'm living in some areas where there's just not a lot of wealth. And it just, I'm just like, just feel so much more gratitude, and it keeps me grounded, spending, not keeping up with the Joneses. And I was just like, my heart was just breaking. So I grabbed this kid. I'm like, hey, dude, here's some popcorn. I handed candy down to this kid. And he's like, well, this is great. You know, who's this guy? You know, and so I'm like buying food for everybody. And I'm like, I don't know. It just keeps you grounded. This is some of these little humble communities where people are,
yeah, now we're gonna pull you out of that rabbit hole and bring you back to Social Security.
Right? I know. Randy, our listeners appreciate this. Our listeners love this crap. They love these digressions because it's real life, man. It's bringing it together.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So here's our golden question, Social Security. So, Randy, are we going to get it? Is it still going to be there? I mean, that's the big – a lot of people even listening to this show are like, what? Social Security? It's not going to be there. What's your take?
Yeah, that is a great question. And especially since it's such a significant tax, right? We're paying in 15.3% of our earnings up to over $128,000. It's a lot of money. And you're paying it in year after year after year. And like I said, it's not like a 401k where you get to walk away with some kind of asset. It's insurance. And so you hear it on the news, yeah. Social Security is going bankrupt, and now it's going bankrupt 4 years earlier than it was before. And now it's 2 years later. And you hear all these different claims. So, you know, just I'm going to give you the real short, condensed version of this. For years and years and years, Social Security functioned pretty well because there was a lot of people contributing and not that many people withdrawing. And when you have a lot of people putting in, just a few people coming out or taking out, the system can function really well. And, mm-hmm. and of course, that's now flip-flopped. Started about 5-6 years ago as all the baby boomers started going into retirement, something like 5,500 a day. So what's happening now is more and more people are claiming benefits, less and less people are paying in because there's less people in the next youngest generation. And as a result, all the surplus money that was built up in what they call the Social Security Trust Fund is slowly getting drained out. Now, there's trillions of dollars in there, and that seems like a lot of money. You know, a trillion bucks, I still can't even get my arms around that. And they got several trillion dollars. But what's going to happen within a few years, whether it's, you know, 10 years or 15 years, that $1 trillion is going to be gone. Right? That's what they mean by Social Security is going bankrupt, because they're going to use up all the surplus. Now, it doesn't mean that Social Security is done, though, because, right, people are still working, people are still paying in. It's just, again, the surplus is gone. There's less people paying into the system. So at that point in time, now you have a problem, because there's only going to be enough money potentially to pay out maybe 70 to 80% of the benefits that you are entitled to. So this is another argument. Hey, I'm going to wait till 70 to get these benefits, but by the time I get them, I might get 20 or 25% less anyway. Why shouldn't I take it now?
Yeah. Why do you got to throw that curveball out there? So it sounds like the Social Security Administration is now running paycheck to paycheck. Like they take money out of one person's paycheck and cut it to another person's paycheck. And there's no float. There's no surplus. It's just one guy, you know, to the next, it sounds like, unfortunately.
Well, but that's the way it was designed, Matt. It was supposed to be a pay-go system. People pay in and people take it out, and it should sustain itself.
As long as we got enough people paying in, that sounds like where the math's breaking down right now.
That's where the math's breaking down, right? Right. And when you talk about, you know, national debt and deficit, if you look at that whole big pie chart of deficit, the biggest chunk of it is Social Security and Medicare. Right. Yeah. And so in reality, Social Security isn't a deficit because there's money in the piggy bank to pay it. Medicare is a deficit because it comes out of the general fund, which, by the way, not to get off on that tangent too bad, but Medicare is really the big elephant in the room because they're definitely not collecting enough money for Medicare insurance to cover all the benefits that they're paying out for Medicare recipients.
Yeah. Now, here's my takeaway on all this. And I want to know if you guys agree. Is that a lot of people think, well, Social Security is not going to be there, or it's such a mess, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to strategize about it. I don't need to even listen to a podcast about it, because it's just this, it's either too complex or it's not going to be there. And I say, bull crap.
You agree.
The government is not going to let this fail. It would be a crisis beyond what we faced in 2007 and 8 with the real estate crisis. If the government was stupid enough to let Medicare and Social Security fail, our government in America would really, arguably, the financial structure would collapse. This is going to be there, people. It's going. The government has got to take care of this. And I think it's up to you and me that we do need to talk about it. We do need to strategize for it, because I don't think it's going away, because it would just be too huge of a disaster for our country. Do you guys agree or not?
I agree 100%. And I've said this for years, that the fixes to Social Security are really relatively simple. They did this under Clinton. They took the full retirement age from 65, made it go to 66. And then for people that were younger, it was like 66 and 2 months, 66 and 6 months. So they extended just literally a few months, and it made Social Security solvent for, you know, a couple decades. Yeah. They could do that same thing again, right? And make full retirement age 68 in a few months.
That makes sense. People are living longer.
You know? They're living longer, right?
And so they draw on it longer. So you're not going to get it as early, but you're going to get it longer.
Hey, 66 right. is the
congratulations.
New 56. Yeah, it's the new 56. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. So that's a solution. You could, you know, right now the cap on Social Security is somewhere $128,000, which it means if Donald Trump and Randy Lupke are filing their Social Security taxes, we're going to pay the same amount in this year. So there's a big disparity there between, you know, what people that make a ton of money pay and versus somebody that makes a, you know, a good income. Mm-hmm. So you could, you know, remove the caps or extend the caps. That's another way to fix it.
Now, let me talk about that just as a planning item. So that's good to know. The cap on Social Security, so, and this is your wage income. If your income, you know, hits 128, is that what it is right now?
It's about 128,000 and change.
Okay. So if you hit that, you've maxed out essentially on your Social Security, what you're paying into Social Security. And I think that's just a good number for people to know from a tax planning standpoint. But let me ask another question, and this will be my last question, which is, what happens in the scenario of I have a spouse who has Social Security benefit and spouse passes away? Maybe we haven't pulled on it yet. Maybe we were starting to pull on it. What happens to the surviving spouse or the kids? Walk through that and how their benefit, let's say they pass away at age 68 or 70 or whatever. How does that work for the surviving spouse or the kids? Does that benefit go away? Where does it go?
Well, that's a good question. Let's answer it two ways, because let's keep both spouses alive for a moment, and they're both working and they're both contributing to Social Security. That means both of them are going to have that 15.3% tax up to $128,000 of earnings, right? And the fact is, if you've been married for 10 years or longer, as a spousal benefit, you're guaranteed to get that spousal benefit even if you don't contribute another penny into your own Social Security. So that's planning you can do while you're both alive, right?
Yeah. Good thing to know, by the way. Let me just restate that.
If you
are a non-working spouse and you've been married, you said 10 years, you get a spousal benefit of 50% of the working spouse's benefit. Is that a fair statement?
That's fair. And so when they compare the benefit claiming time, they look at what your earnings benefit would be based on your earnings record and what your spouse's is, and whichever one's greater, that's the one you're going to get. So for a lot of people, they're basically putting money into the Social Security fund, but they're never going to get a benefit greater than they get as their spousal benefit anyway. So it's just a waste of money.
Yeah. Now, and let's digress on that topic, and not a dumb Mark story, is that a lot of people ask, well, should I put my spouse on payroll? And I've written blog articles on this, done videos on this. This is a big one, and it's in the book too. Is it because
of
that?
And a lot of them say, I want my spouse to get a Social Security benefit. Should I add them to payroll, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they're thinking, well, I better do it. And they just do it. And I'm like, whoa. If you look at the spousal benefit, it's better than what your spouse was going to get anyway. You've been paying into a system for nothing, for nothing. And so you've got to run those numbers on the spousal benefit.
Yeah. Now, to answer the question the other way, Matt, what if somebody passed away? And keep in mind that the survivor benefit could have been from somebody that passed away 10, 15 years ago. I just had this with one of my clients where she literally lost her husband like 20 years previous, and now she's working and about to turn full retirement age. And so she's thinking of claiming her Social Security benefits. And when we did the research and found out that she had a survivor benefit, it actually worked out better for her to defer her personal earnings until she was 70 and claim her survivor benefit at full retirement age. So she got 5 years worth of benefits from her deceased husband from 20 years ago while she was still deferring and going to earn more income at 70 when she finally pulls the trigger.
Gosh, see, this is why it's just awesome. People don't know this. I'm so glad we're talking about it. Okay, I got another question. Here's a good one. I get a lot of people that say, well, Mark, I want the most Social Security I can get. I believe it's going to be there, so I want to pay in. And I'm showing them the payroll matrix going, whoa, 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 you're taking way too much salary. Let's get more pass-through income, get the 20% deduction. There's so much here you can do with your S-Corp. Don't take so much payroll. And they go, well, I want maximum Social Security. And then I kind of get, I don't get stumped. I tell them, hey, you're better off to take the money and go invest it rather than pay so much into Social Security, because it's not a dollar for dollar return. But what's your take on that, Randy? I don't know what sometimes to respond to make my point. I think I'm right, but what's your take?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because you have to look at it from a few different angles. So first of all, if you want to maximize the benefits you receive from Social Security, you just need to live a long time, right? And if you live to 100, you're going to get way more than if you only lived to 85.
Is it because of lifetime earnings, or is it your last 10 years or your most productive 10 years? What is Social Security looking at? lifetime.
Well, it's looking at your 35 years of highest earnings. But I'm just saying, look, the longer you get it, the more money you're going to get. So if I start taking money at 70 and I live till 90, I got 20 years of benefits. If I only live to 85, I got 15. So live longer and you'll get more money.
All right. Fair enough. Okay.
Right.
Thank you. I like it. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. And I skipped across the thing. The 35 years is really important. So they look back after your entire earnings record. So let's say you're 20 years old when you started working and you were 70 years old when you stopped working. Well, that's what, 45 years of earnings. So if you had years that were lower or years that were higher, they're going to take out all those lower ones and just take the 35 best ones to calculate your benefit. So this goes back into your point, you know, now do I need to maximize my contributions today? Because let's say during those years when you're in your 20s and 30s, you maximized your benefits, all those years. Well, they have a factor to scale all those up so that you could literally pay nothing the last 10 years into Social Security and still receive maximum benefit if you had 35 years of maximum benefits in your early years of earnings.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, right? but now also on that point though, okay, 35 year look back, most productive years. Isn't there a kind of a law of diminishing returns? Like me and Warren Buffett are generally going to get the same Social Security. I mean, it's not like, okay, I'm going to pay myself a big salary the next 5 years. And so my Social Security went from $2,500 a month to $4,000 a month. I mean, you're not going to get this huge bang for your buck, right? I mean, it's really kind of all within a general range. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. So Social Security was initially created to be a social safety net to prevent people from being in abject poverty when they were in at retirement age, right? So they had some sort of base of income when they were 65 or older. That's what it was designed for. And so the system has built into what they call bend points. So people that have lower incomes will get a larger percentage of that in Social Security benefits. So I'll use an example. Let's say I had somebody that made $24,000 a year. They might get $20,000 of Social Security benefits when they retire. Now take somebody that makes $200,000 a year, and that person may only get $36,000 of income when they retire from Social Security benefits. So it's really skewed to provide the greatest percentage of income replacement for those with the lowest income. That's the way it's designed.
My question is, what is the max amount that someone can get out of Social Security? What's the largest Social Security amount you see? And what's kind of the average amount people get? As you know, if they take it at just regular full retirement age, what are those numbers?
Yeah, so the Social Security benefit in general increases a little bit every year with the cost of living adjustment. Mm-hmm. But as a figure, as a benchmark, you're about $2,600 to $2,800 per year would be your full retirement age.
$2,600 a month or $26,000 a year?
$2,600 to $2,800 per month, right?
Is that average? Average.
That would be the average maximum, right? Okay. That would be your average. And I'd say the average I see is about $2,000, $2,200 a month is kind of what you see. And then again, if I wait till I'm 70, that $3,000 could be $3,600 a month. And $3,600 a month, if you receive it for a long number of years, could be a substantial increase in benefits.
And I'm sorry to ask a dumb question here, but I'm going to ask it because this, again, many of you listeners have probably already known. I noticed I'm kind of fascinated with this, and this is why we're having an expert on here. Is okay? Let's say I turn 70, but my wife died 10 years earlier, or I'm a woman and my husband died 10 years earlier. Is there going to be any bump in my Social Security because of my spouse's Social Security, or does it just come down to mine? Am I going to get two Social Security checks, I guess?
You'll never get two Social Security checks. You'll always get one. So let's say a husband and wife are both receiving Social Security, and let's just keep it simple. Let's say the husband receives $3,000 a month and the wife receives $2,000 a month, right? Okay. Husband dies. Then what happens is she moves into his Social Security check. So she'll give up her $2,000 and continue to receive his $3,000. You'll always get the higher of the two.
Okay. Gosh, Matt, wasn't that a good question?
That was a good question, Mark.
Thank you. That was a good question.
It was a better answer. And the guy giving the answer really gets the credit.
That's true. Come on, the question's better than the answer there. No, that was sweet, Randy. So when you're both in retirement, I want to restate this. So if you're both in retirement, both receiving Social Security, and one of the spouses dies, their surviving spouse is going to step into the higher of the two checks.
That's right. You don't ever get two checks, but you'll give up the lower one and continue to receive the higher one.
But I want two checks.
Well, you can't have two checks.
Oh, I was trying to set you up to say, well, you can if you start saving now in your own retirement account because it's better than Social Security. See, I was setting that up for you, Randy.
Well, you could turn it around, though. If you were married for 10 years and got divorced, and then got married for another 10 years and got divorced, and then got married for another 10 years and got divorced, you could potentially have three ex-spouses all claiming benefits off of your Social Security record. That you could do.
Wow. Okay. Cool. We just went from a really good answer to a really crappy one. Well, luckily that's not my story.
That's pretty funny though.
Yeah. That's a dangerous path to go down. We won't
joke. Yeah. Let's trust you.
Thanks, Randy. We do have our limits on this show. All right.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, the underlying message is it's really complicated and it's nuanced, right? It's nuanced. Yeah. Everybody's situation is a little bit different. And that's why you really want to go through the analysis to figure out what's best for you. You know, what's your income situation? What's your health situation? Were you married before? Were you divorced? Do you have a deceased spouse? All these different things play into the decision as to when you should start claiming benefits.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to give one major takeaway here too. And this is why we wrote our book, The Financial Freedom, is because this is stuff that we have to start talking about more of. And we want our clients to have other sources. I mean, some of you may have been very depressed with some of the numbers you had Randy share and go, wow, that's it. That's all I get. That's why we're talking about buying rental property, investing in our IRAs, our Roths, our 401ks, having a small business, trying to get out of debt. Guys, it's a coordinated tactical attack to help you and me. I'm living it with you to make sure that when I get to that age where I don't want to work as hard, I've got some safety net there. And Social Security is a part of that. It's a piece. But Randy, good stuff. Yeah, I love it.
Now, Randy, where can people get more info from you or resources? I know you've got some stuff on your website. To learn more about this, you're going to contact with you to maybe even do an analysis on your Social Security.
Yeah, so the easiest way to reach me is at our primary website, which is Lifetime Paradigm. And I'll spell it because it's an easy to say word, a couple words, but it's hard to spell, right? Lifetime is easy, Lifetime, but Paradigm is Paradi. G like George, M like Mary.com. So you go there and you click on the links, follow them to our Social Security website where you can download actually like a booklet on this stuff. And we really do have, not to do self-promotion so much, but the book that Mark and I wrote has to have a really good section on Social Security too.
A whole chapter. It is chapter 10, Understanding the Limitations and Potential Power of Social Security. And, so if you want, of course, folks, to study up a little bit further before a consultation with Randy, it wouldn't hurt for you to peruse that chapter. You just get over to Amazon or markjkohler.com, the law firm website, and pick up a copy of Financial Freedom. We'll have Randy's link and contact information in our newsletter this coming week. So people, you can get to it there. Please subscribe to the newsletter. We're going to continue to try to bring good topics like this. Man. Great show. Randy, thank you so much. I know it takes a lot out of your time. You were at a conference today. We pulled you away. Thank you for coming in and talking to us. Great topic.
Well, you're welcome. I'm going to get back on that conference right now.
All right. Well done, Randy. Thanks so much.
All right, guys.
A lot today. Well, thanks everyone for being with us today. We appreciate it. Hope you learned something. I mean, God, we had some great tips on attorney-client privilege. From you, yours truly, and the internet sales tax from the gentleman from the great state of Idaho.
Let's not go there.
Still sore on that, huh?
No.
And man, Randy, that was awesome talking about Social Security. I always learn a lot. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back, of course, next week with another topic to help you better live the American dream, protect your wealth, save on taxes, and grow your wealth. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.